Hello, and welcome to the First Pac Trust Bancorp, Inc.'s February 9th, 2011, fourth quarter 2010 earnings investor conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Mr. James Sheehy, Executive Vice President, Secretary, and Treasurer for First Pac Trust Bancorp. Mr. Sheehy, you may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us for today's fourth quarter 2010 earnings investor conference call. With me on the call today are First Pac Trust Bancorp's President and Chief Executive Officer, Gregory A. Mitchell. Also here to assist Mr. Mitchell in answering your questions later during this teleconference is the company's Principal Accounting Officer, Senior Vice President Controller Regan Lauer, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the company's wholly owned Pacific Trust Bank subsidiary, Hans Gantz, and the bank's Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer, Richard Herron. Today's conference call is being recorded for replay via phone, and a copy of the recording and a transcript of the meeting will be available later on the company's investor relations website. Before I turn it over to Greg, I want to remind everyone that, as always, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based on our best views of the world and our business as we see them today. Those elements can change as the world changes. Please interpret them in that light. The forward-looking statements in our February 8th fourth quarter earnings release and 8-K filing also apply to our comments today. Those documents are available on our firstpactrustbancorp.com investor relations website, as are other 8-Ks filed regarding investor presentation materials and other matters. A PDF file of the investor presentation February 2011 slideshow for this earnings conference call can be found on the company's investor relations website under the link entitled Annual Reports and Presentations. We will have time for questions and answers at the end of the presentation. I'll now turn it over to our President and CEO, Greg Mitchell.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, and thank all of you for joining us on this fourth quarter earnings call, and really the beginning of a new day for First Pac Trust Bank Corp. and Pacific Trust Bank. I am, as many of you know, I've been on board officially since November 1st, 2010, and I'm extremely excited by what I've seen thus far and what I project to happen on a go-forward basis. And before jumping into the fourth quarter results for 2010, I'd like to sort of revisit where we've been and talk a little bit about where we're going, and then I'm hoping to spend a fair amount of time with you to respond to questions. I'm joined today, as Jim mentioned, by Hans Gantz, who was really the founder of First Pac Trust Bancorp, the guy that took this company public many years ago. Richard Herron, who's one of our new Executive Vice Presidents and Chief Administrative Officer. As many of you know, Richard was formerly with the FDIC here in California, as well as having been a very skilled community banker. Regan, as our Chief Accounting Officer, has been here doing yeoman's work on providing greater transparency and clarity in the financial statements, and hopefully each of you are acknowledging that as you review our most recent results. And Jim has continued to be here sort of holding down the fort, dealing with treasury issues and a number of other tasks at the Bancorp. We're also joined on this call remotely by Matt Bonaccorso. Matt is our new Chief Credit Officer. He worked with me at California National Bank and most recently served as a senior officer for U.S. Bank running special assets in the western United States. Also with us on the call is Chang Liu. Chang is our new Chief Lending Officer, also coming recently from U.S. Bank and having been a senior vice president at California National Bank and a very prolific generator of commercial real estate loans. Joseph Abraham, Director of Credit Services, is really somewhat of a rocket scientist on loan servicing, risk analytics, credit management, and able to build and maintain platforms that are very strong from a risk management perspective. And last but not least, our Director of Retail Banking, Galen Anderson, who worked with me at California National Bank and most recently held a senior position with U.S. Bank, where he was responsible for some sales and service initiatives and some expansion plans for U.S. Bank. These are a team of professionals who have grown an institution from a small community bank to a mid-sized $7.7 billion regional bank, have taken a company from a small platform to a large one, and have done it with a great deal of regulatory success and earning success in the future. And I point that out because I'll be counting on this team as well as each of you to assist me, to assist the board, and to assist our employees in transforming Pacific Trust Bank and First Pac Trust Bank Corp into an organization that we can all be extremely proud of. So where we've been, as many of you know, I view the transformation process of a financial institution as a measured journey from a defined point today to a much brighter point in the future. And it's a journey that requires a fair amount of work, a lot of effort, a lot of victories, some setbacks, but takes us to a destination that should provide great results for our shareholders, our customers, our employees, and the communities that we serve. We are moving to a community bank model that should be beneficial to all. As many of you also know, the strategy here at First Pac Trust Bank Corp is to take advantage of three distinct opportunities in our market. One is to leverage our very strong capital base and that strong management team to achieve solid returns for our shareholders through the execution of an organic growth strategy. By that, we mean we take advantage of opportunities that exist in the market to grow the organization's loan portfolio and to transform the organization's liability portfolio into that of a community bank with high levels of core deposits, low funding costs, and a great deal of rate stability in a rising rate environment. Our view is that if we focus on qualitative growth at this institution, we should provide strong earnings for our shareholders, stability for our regulators, and expansion in price earnings multiples as the market looks at PacTrust's income statement, its income stream, as something that's stable and predictable. Under our organic growth strategy, we see the bank growing to about $2 billion over the next 5 years, and we also have positioned ourselves to take advantage of opportunities in the market from an acquisition perspective. And as I've shared with others in the past, we see an opportunity to grow our bank from $900 million to $5 billion over the next 5 years. So we are taking steps through the acquisition of capital, the acquisition of management, and the prudent execution of a business plan to achieve those objectives. A lot has been done in the last 3 months to begin to get us there. First and foremost, we closed on the capital transaction on November 1st, raising $60 million gross, a little over $56 million net in new Tier 1 common equity. We promised to the market that we would repay TARP and completed and executed on that promise. And not only that, but in January of 2011, we were successful in repurchasing the warrants from the Department of the Treasury at a price level that was accretive to the book value of First Pac Trust Bancorp. It was accretive then, and now that the market has begun to take notice of our stock, you know, it's caused that accretion to improve even more. So those are a couple of the notable achievements, and I'll talk about some more as we go along. So where are we now? The bank remains strong, sound, and positioned for organic growth. As I mentioned earlier, we've hired the strong management team, and I've introduced those individuals earlier, and many of you have met them here at the bank. We've established the strong capital base. We've repaid the TARP, and we've begun to execute this new business plan. Part of what we shared with many of you was that we intended to acquire opportunistic branch locations throughout Southern California and populate those branches with managers and community bankers who are able to take advantage of the high level of dissatisfaction that exists in the community banking arena. Last year, we acquired a branch in the village of La Jolla, a very attractive 10,000-square-foot building, which we acquired from the FDIC for $2.1 million. So that's roughly $210 a square foot. But those of you who know Southern California, I think, can understand the value of that transaction from a real estate perspective. More importantly, that branch previously held as much as $140 million in deposits from the very attractive and affluent La Jolla community. We will soon populate that branch with a number of community bankers, and more importantly, populate that branch with a number of customers, expanding our footprint from 9 offices today to 10. Earlier this quarter, we announced a transaction with the FDIC for the acquisition of a branch in the community of San Marcos, California. Attractive location, solid market, that branch held in excess of $90 million in deposits. So between those two offices, roughly $230 million in potential deposits. We don't expect to populate those branches at that level in the near term, but we certainly see an opportunity to gain some share in those markets, particularly when recent polls suggest that more than 70% of the customers that have been dislocated as a result of mergers and acquisitions rate their experience and their like of their new bank as unacceptable, and that they are highly dissatisfied with where they're at now. So again, we'll populate those offices with great managers, take advantage of some of that growth that exists within our markets. We have continued to work our loan portfolio, improving credit quality trends, and we'll spend more time on that as we go through the specific numbers. But you've seen a continued reduction in non-performing assets, a stabilization in our REO, continued reduction in our delinquencies, and overall improvement in the credit portfolio. And we'll give a little more color there. So we've begun to execute the capital plan. Begun to execute the business plan, continue to build on capital, continue to build on management, and are now positioned, I think, well to move forward with the full execution of our business plan. I talked a moment ago about three legs of the stool: organic growth, acquisitions, and potential FDIC-assisted transactions. We are not focusing principally on FDIC-assisted transactions in this market. We see today a significant level of opportunity in organic growth and a significant level of opportunity in acquisitions. As you might imagine, having a community bank in Southern California with more than $136 million in tangible equity and the ability to attract more equity through other channels makes us somewhat of a darling among community banks in Southern California. And your imagination probably wouldn't have to work too hard to think about the number of reverse inquiries the organization may have received as a result of our capital position and the belief on the part of some banks that they may benefit from a combination with FPTB. So that's a little bit about where we've been, where we are today, and why I'm sort of quite excited about where we're going in 2011 and beyond. So with that, I'm going to flip to the earnings forecast for, or earnings results for the fourth quarter and the year. As noted in our 8K filed yesterday, Bancorp generated $1.4 million prior to the payment of dividends and $1.2 million or 15 cents a share available for common shareholders. There was, as has been pointed out by many of you, a fair amount of noise, most of which was predictable, in the earnings stream for the fourth quarter. We incurred relatively significant costs in connection with completion of the recapitalization effort. A significant portions of that were partial payouts under change of control agreements, redemption of some of the existing options that existed at the institution, certain legal expenses, and other transactional expenses. In addition, as part of our asset quality initiatives, we took some additional charges on our OREO portfolio, most notably on one asset, which was a construction project as part of a participation. We previously disclosed that as an asset that was carried at 36% of the original loan balance. That asset is now carried at less than 25% of the original loan balance. I think, as many of you know, in the market, there is somewhat of a disconnect between appraised values received by financial institutions on assets and what it might take to clear assets in the open market. We feel pretty good about where that asset is valued now. In addition to that, from a credit perspective, we moved off a number of OREOs that were coming into the bank quite clearly and are now sitting on an OREO portfolio that consists of that one construction project, which is a legacy, one high-end home in Rancho Santa Fe, which we're making good progress on, and four additional small single-family homes. I'm hopeful that the trends from an OREO perspective will continue to improve. Back to earnings, for the full year, the bank generated positive net income. For the quarter, the bank generated $3.1 million, or 39 cents per share. That excludes elimination of a lot of the noise related to the transaction expense, OREO charges, and certain provisions. What was also notable in the fourth quarter was that the bank was fortunate enough, Bank and Bancorp, were fortunate enough to realize meaningful gains on the disposition of some Z-tranche securities Bancorp acquired in connection with First Pac Trust's acquisition of certain super senior re-REMICs in 2008 and 2009. By way of history, Bancorp acquired those assets at roughly 5 cents on the hundred, wrote those down to zero, and held them at Bancorp. We were approached by a third party in December, and were able to sell those securities at greater than 50. So it was a very nice gain. It also spoke well to the strength and quality of our super senior piece that came from that re-REMIC portfolio, because arguably if the market was willing to buy the junior-most piece of a security at a meaningful premium, it must speak to the strength of the capital structure and the stack as it relates to the larger component. So other expenses, the $3.1 million that I discussed as it related to the salary and related expenses, the $1.6 million in charge-offs and other expenses related to the portfolio of OREO, and a handful of miscellaneous expenses. We all, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, increased the private placement, raising $60 million, substantially increasing the share count, repaid the TARP, and as I discussed in January, were successful in retiring the warrants. So earnings positive, the core levels were positive, base earnings were positive, and we showed some nice trends as it related to our funding costs and other elements. And we've discussed those previously, and would be happy to provide additional color later as we go along. Asset quality, 9.4% reduction in NPAs. In our conversations with analysts and other market participants, as well as our regulators, we began to understand that we were being inappropriately criticized for the way we were reporting our non-performing assets. So we've provided in this 8K and in the 10K that you should receive sometime next week, and in the investor presentation, a great deal of transparency on what our non-performing asset portfolio looks like, and how we are accounting for that now and on a go-forward basis. We think you will like what you see, both from a trends perspective and certainly from a detailed reporting perspective. Notwithstanding that increased transparency, yeah, we're very pleased with the general direction of credit risk. You saw the ALLL decline from 17.6 million to 14.6 million, taking us now down to 2.12% reserves to loans. That was largely attributable to a charge-off on two long-term non-performing assets. Under GAAP, if an asset is delinquent for more than 180 days, you have to take the specific charge off. So that was completed. It was not an intent or an exercise to have negative provisioning. None of that occurred in the fourth quarter. To the contrary, we slightly increased the GDA or ALLL during Q4. Again, as I mentioned a moment ago, the levels of delinquencies and other classified assets continued to decline. So I'm, from an earnings perspective, from a margin perspective, from an asset quality perspective, from a management perspective, I am encouraged and pleased. I have to tell you that one of the nicest comments that I've received while chatting with investors, current and prospective, was during a meeting in Chicago a few weeks ago where I met for the second time with a group of investors that we had spoken with in August of 2010. And in August of 2010, they said they really liked the story and would continue to look at it. When I met with them in January, they said, you know, we meet with dozens and dozens of investors who come through our doors saying that we're going to do certain things, that we're going to complete a recap, that we're going to transform an organization, and you can't believe how many people fail to perform. We are delighted to see that everything you told us you would do in the summer and fall of 2010, you've done in 2011. And our hope and expectation is to continue to do that for our shareholders, for our customers, for our employees and the communities we serve. We've got a great deal of responsibility. We also have a great deal of opportunity, and we're very, very excited about the future that stands before us. So with that, I'm going to give Hans any comments that you'd like to make as it relates to fourth quarter earnings or other trends?
No, all I would add to is that the statement that I made in the announcement that, you know, the team is now on board. I'm very excited about the possibilities down the road. We are going to restructure some of our lending and deposit products as we promised the market we would do. And I'm sure that at the end of this first quarter here, most of this stuff will start getting into gear. And I think the market can look forward to see some results out of that by the middle of the year.
Yeah.
So I think that's an exciting approach because it's part of the expertise needed to transform the bank into more community bank approach, and having the right people there with the right leadership is clearly essential, and I'm excited for the guys to be on board and moving forward. So that to me is the most exciting part in the first quarter.
Thank you, and as always, and you know this, you know how much I appreciate your leadership and the way we've worked together between Bancorp and Bank on a go-forward basis. So I couldn't be happier.
Neither could I.
So with that, I'm going to open it up for questions, and hopefully I can provide a lot more detail on earnings, asset quality trends, liability trends, and others as we respond to questions. I was intentionally being sort of high level in my comments, and hopefully we can provide a little more detail in response to specific questions that you may have. So with that, I'd invite the operator to open the lines.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Ed Timmons with Stern Aggie.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Ed, how are you today?
Not too bad. Hope you guys are doing well.
We're doing well.
Just a couple quick questions. I guess the first one on the margin, you got some pressure this quarter from the excess liquidity in the cash position. Do you have any plans to deploy that, invest it into the portfolio, or are you going to try to remain fairly liquid given the advances coming due this year?
Well, we've got $55 million of advances coming through in 2011, and interestingly, those advances have about a 3.47% coupon, so we expect some nice pickup as we replace those with money market demand accounts or core relationships or even potentially CDs. There's some pretty good lift there. We have substantial capacity to attract deposits. We also have access to some other funding vehicles in this market that are very attractive. For example, we have zero exposure to the state of California, and we can borrow at an all-in cost of about 34 basis points from the state. So we have numerous means of attracting deposits and don't intend to maintain huge levels of liquidity. You'll see us continue in 2011, to Hans's point, to increase the production of loans. You may see some purchased asset activity in 2011, and you'll see increased growth in the bank's securities portfolio. So the levels of cash that we have sitting around should be somewhat limited, we intend to be more fully invested and not hopefully suffer much more margin compression. Is that response to the question, Ed?
Yeah, it was good. What kind of securities do you think you might be looking at?
Because we're a bank and working in a new regulatory environment, we'll have a decent portion of liquid agency securities, which are required to meet the new liquidity standards. We continue to see some opportunities in the re-REMIC portfolio with attractive credit terms and attractive yields. As you know, that product set, if properly understood and properly underwritten, can be quite attractive. And the bank has done a very good job in that in the past. We're also continuing to look at other security classes that tend to have short durations and low credit risk.
Maybe. All right, and then on M&A, you guys touched on it briefly. I'm just wondering, is there increased interest from sellers versus, say, 6 months ago? And at this point, what is your view on fair value marks and goodwill creation, and is that an impediment to kind of near term deal activity?
Great question, Ed. Thank you. Despite some of the high premiums that have been paid in Texas with a Comerica Sterling deal, there's an increasing awareness on the parts of boards and managements here in California, at least, that they're, for many of the institutions, they've become either zombies and are now among the walking dead. Some of them know it, some of them don't. Those that do are now beginning to understand FAS 141R and the mark issues and capital issues that relate to that. So they tend to be receptive to discussions on financial terms that are beneficial to the resulting institution. It's unlike cash purchasers they get the check and they go away forever. When investors participate with First Pack Trust, they need to recognize that they're buying into a long-term opportunity, and that the stock of the resulting institution needs to remain strong, and that when they run the present value analysis with their financial advisors or others, they see the benefit of being realistic from a pricing perspective. So I guess the bottom line is we see an opportunity to complete transactions that remain capital efficient after considering FAS 141R issues and others. And as we've noted previously, we expect to complete transactions that would be accretive to our tangible book value and accretive to earnings. Is that responsive to your question, Ed?
Yeah, good answer. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Your next question comes from Kevin Reynolds with Wunderlich Securities.
How you doing, Greg?
Hey, good. Good hearing from you, Kevin.
Thanks for having the call, and good disclosures and discussion as well. Sort of along the same lines, as a consolidator, I mean, it's one thing to have the potential sellers out there starting to come to your way of thinking, but in your commentary where you talk about San Diego seems to be getting a little bit better, does that change at all your views as to how you deploy your current capital, i.e., is it more beneficial for you to go out and create your own paper rather than buying someone else's that's marked down if we have, in fact, made the turn and we consistently get better from here?
Well, much of the paper that we'll be originating, Kevin, will be our own. And one of the elements that's particularly attractive for us in California, at least, and I'm not as familiar with the balance sheet challenges of institutions outside the state, is many of the smaller institutions in California were sort of one-trick ponies who focused their efforts and energies on the origination of commercial real estate assets. So they have books that are heavily concentrated in CRE and are now facing increased pressure and increasing pressure from their regulators to delever their balance sheets, to reduce their concentrations in CRE. So some of their best relationships are being pushed out, and there is now a very limited universe of banks that are originating in that space. So we continue to see an opportunity, and it's actually strengthened by the improving economy, to originate smaller ticket commercial real estate loans in San Diego, Orange, and LA counties. Yeah, it's important to note that Chang and Matt and Joseph are all domiciled out of a loan production office and center in Los Angeles. So the bank that they used to work with had a very substantial portfolio in the L.A. and Orange County market. They have pretty deep relationships in that market from their own book. And many other community bankers from smaller institutions that are now facing capital constraints and where the lenders at those institutions want to feed their families are certainly having conversations with us saying that they'd like to join with Pacific Trust Bank. You know, notably, while those banks are constrained by concentration risk, we have about $450 million in immediate capacity for CRE out of this institution. So the pain that exists in the market as a result of low levels of supply, meaning lenders able to lend in that arena, gives us some unique opportunities because the demand resulting from refinancing or repositioning of existing commercial real estate assets or banks having to push off their relationships fits well into our strength of scalable balance sheet, strong capital, and sufficient balance sheet capacity to board those types of credit.
Okay. And
is that responsive, Kevin? Or
very good. The other question I had was, I guess, more of a detailed question in the quarter. It looks like after you exclude the salaries or the payments related to the change of control, you're looking at about $2 million in salaries expense. What do you think the run rate is as you go forward there? And if, and I apologize if I missed it, if you've already addressed that.
We didn't already address it. We think that as a result of the addition of some of our lenders and some branch staff coming into the organization, that the salary component for the bank and Bancorp on a consolidated basis should rise by about $4 million in 2011. So we've discussed our expectation that the efficiency ratio would rise from its historically low level, and you would expect that as part of a transformation. But if and when we get to the point where we're originating the levels of volumes of new production that we believe that we will originate and matching that off with funding costs that are sub 1%, you know, we see an opportunity to get sort of high fours, very low five NIMs. And just hypothetically, if you got, and I'll just make up a number here, if you had $150 million in production at a 5 NIM, you've got, you know, sort of 7.5% in interest, net interest income, plus some additional fee income to help support, you know, $4 million in gross expense. And then as the portfolio continues to grow, or we perhaps pursue some wholesale activities that are done at, you know, give us that margin with lower production costs, you'll see the efficiency ratio coming more in line. Is that a response to your question?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
And by the way, those are projections that we had previously talked about, and this is pretty much in line with what we expected at the completion of the transaction.
Your next question comes from Andrew Leash with Sandler O'Neill and Partners.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great, thank you.
Nice work reducing the non-performers there.
Thank you.
Two questions. First one is on, it looked like that the commercial real estate and multifamily portfolio was up just slightly, so maybe there's been a bit of organic growth there, which is good to see. But I'm curious if that is the case, like, who are you running into as far as competition is concerned? Is there a lot of big guys out there that can price someone like you out of the market by just going really low?
No. We're not. I think what volume you did see may have been a green commercial real estate asset. As you recall, in the past, the bank originated green mortgages for residential, which is where substantially all of the production is, and a little bit in commercial. We are not seeing, and I'm going to sort of quote my friend Chang Liu here, we are not seeing significant competition from the big players in the small ticket CRE arena. Doing a $3 million or $5 million commercial real estate loan isn't very exciting for an institution that's got, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in balance sheet. they tend to be focusing on slightly larger credits where there is much more price sensitivity. We continue to see opportunities in our space for nice yields with strong credit metrics and are not yet at least seeing significant competition from a price perspective or people reaching for credit. And quite frankly, I don't think that will happen for some time. We believe over the five-year period that competition will increase in that CRE space, and actually believe that during the five-year period, some of the conduits and people who were particularly irrational during this last cycle will come back into the market and will attach to many of our commercial real estate loans meaningful prepayment penalties to give us a little bit of a goodbye kiss if and when the markets get crazy again and some of our borrowers say, you know, we want to go to somebody who's going to give us 4% money or whatever it is at that point in time. But we're not seeing in the CRE space crazy pricing yet or crazy terms. And again, the level of competition is somewhat limited and continues to be constrained by the concentration issues and capital issues that I discussed earlier. Is that responsive, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And then my last question, just on the occupancy and equipment expense line item, looks like that was up quite a bit from the highest level in a while. But with the new branches that you're planning on adding, and maybe this infrastructure upgrade or IT infrastructure upgrade, like, is there like any sort of like run rate or maybe lumpiness that might have in 2011?
A limited amount. We've done a capital budget as we acquire these locations. You're seeing an increase in sort of fixed assets and equipment. There's some computer upgrades that we'll be doing. There's some systems upgrades that we'll be doing to support the deeper community banking and bit of small business model. The bank already had a lot of that infrastructure in place. You know, there's some routine with really any bank, you know, need to upgrade ATMs to deal with, you know, changes in ADA. And so you'll see some rises, but nothing particularly notable. The biggest expense lift that you'll see relates to building out the first two locations at any additional offices that we may open for the balance of 2011.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll step back.
Thank you, Andrew.
Your next question comes from Dan Nicholas with Robert W. Baird.
Hey, Dan. How you doing today?
Hello, Dan.
Dan, your line is open.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
We hear you. Thanks, Dan.
Okay. Sorry, guys. Good morning.
How are things in Richmond?
They're good. They're good. Probably not as nice as out there, but we're doing okay.
Good.
A couple questions. In the presentation, you talk about the possibility to access small business the SBLF funding.
Yep.
Tier 1 capital. I guess just trying to get a sense of how you all view that from an attractiveness standpoint or an appeal standpoint relative to your balance sheet and growth prospects.
Well, we view it pretty positively. We've had some conversations with Treasury. We've certainly had conversations with our regulator over the topic. You know, our initial concern on looking at SBLF was, you know, the market reacts poorly because we're in bed with the government, or worse yet, the government imposes some strings or conditions that make the real cost of that capital far greater than 1%. In chatting with people within our community and other market participants, we think there's much less of a negative stigma regarding small business loan guarantee program than TARP or any other historic government support. And quite frankly, think there's a positive spin to the market that says, you know, PacTrust intends to leverage its capital position to continue to help small businesses grow in L.A., Orange, and San Diego counties, as well as our other markets. And from a capital structure perspective or cost perspective, since we are starting with an extremely low level of commercial exposure, our C&I book is $547,000. We would need to show very de minimis asset growth in that class in order to qualify for the 1% capital rate. So if we can acquire, in our case, $43 million in debt, effectively 10-year debt with a coupon at 1%, that should provide meaningful benefits to our common shareholders and other investors as we leverage that capital through organic growth or use it to help support some of our acquisition initiatives.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then I guess you, if I understood you all correctly, you kind of said you won't be as focused as much on the FDIC front going forward here as you will on the organic and more traditional M&A front. Is that a function of less deals to be had or less attractive deals or the terms of the deals? Or
yeah, it's a good question. We think, and I'm glad you asked that because it gives me a chance to add a little more color there. In Southern California, there are a fewer number of available FDIC institutions that we think will fail. You know, Richard obviously has a lot of familiarization with the process, the peoples, and probably a bit of the pipeline that exists out there. And I may give him a chance to speak to that topic more specifically. So we're not centering our business plan around success in completing FDIC-assisted transactions. We found that some of our competitors that have gone out and raised capital think that that's nirvana, and everything centers around FDIC deals. That's sort of silly, and if we focused on that, we'd lose opportunities to grow organically and lose opportunities to acquire some of these other institutions that we think can be had at levels that are attractive to their shareholders and certainly attractive to our shareholders. We also see opportunities in the market and expect to continue to see opportunities to purchase things from the FDIC, assets that may be repackaged with a little more seasoning and some pricing that makes it attractive, either loans or securities. So we'll be looking to the FDIC process for that. You know, we're on their list. You know, we're seeing some product from the FDIC. And hope to build on that. Richard, you want to speak briefly about the universe that's out there?
Well, we are already approved from the FDIC perspective, so we can begin looking at portfolios, assets, ORE that fall within our purview from the descriptive locations that we provided to the FDIC at the time of our application. As it pertains to bank failures, Greg is absolutely right. There are a number of firms out there that have attempted to raise capital, brought money in, but are forced to jump regions on failed bank acquisitions in locations that are not attractive to us or not markets that we are looking to participate in at this time.
I mean, the other part of it from a strategic perspective, Dan, is we look at where some of those failed institutions are. They're in markets that are really not contiguous to where we're at today, and we think folks like many of you on the call would sort of scratch your head if you saw us suddenly pick up an FDIC-assisted institution in Walla Walla, Washington, which would be sort of way out of our market. Being now the largest federally chartered institution in San Diego, which is a vibrant economy, you know, strong defense spending, significant improvements in technology spending in this market, and significant improvements in life sciences and healthcare spending, as well as being in part of the eighth largest economy in the world. We think we've got a lot of opportunity organically and through unassisted acquisitions in our primary markets. I think it might have been your firm, Dan, that did a population showing somewhere around 127 institutions sub $500 million in assets that have concentration risk issues. So if you think about the number of assets that those institutions hold, the limited number of buyers that exist out there, I think you can see ample opportunity for PacTrust to be successful in picking up some of those institutions. And I think that's much more controllable than a possible win on an FDIC-assisted transaction. That may have given you more than what you wanted.
No, that's really helpful. That makes sense. I think that's all I got. I'll hop back in the queue. Thanks,
guys. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Brett Vallon with Fig Partners.
Hey, Brett.
Morning,
how are you
doing? Y'all. Pretty good. I know you touched on the SBLF and on your slide there in your presentation, but I don't know if somebody specifically asked if what the dollar amount of the SBA loan pipeline is. If you have a number you can give me.
Well, we think because our small business sort of C&I ambitions are modest at best. We think someone asked earlier about price competition and in markets. We think that where there's a little bit of craziness today is in the C&I arena, as some of those institutions that were heavily concentrated in CRE are now trying to go into a new market to get a little bit of traction and growth. So we see goals of getting to perhaps on a $2 billion balance sheet, say $90 million, less than 5% of the total asset portfolio in pure C&I by the end of 2015. So it's pretty small as it relates to totals. The play for us is more dealing with professional small businesses within our primary markets that are pretty well established, having much larger focus on the deposit relationship, and then bank at work programs with those small businesses where once we formed a trusting relationship with the business, our local branch managers will go into those businesses, provide some training on financial literacy, provide a suite of products and services that would be very attractive to the employees of those institutions, and theoretically branching out to vendors and others. It's sort of a wedge strategy of get the small business relationship, overwhelm them with a quality product suite and sort of a community banking model where they are all treated with dignity and respect and can count on their community banker to be there for them, and then build on that relationship to sort of branch out to employees, customers, and friends. We had a fair amount of success with that at one of my former banks, and we think we'll have pretty high level of success here. So you'll see growth if we're successful in execution of that, and I believe we will. You'll see an inordinate amount of growth in liabilities versus assets on that side, but you'll still see meaningful growth to more than exceed the expectations of SBLF. Because again, if you're starting with sort of $600,000 in pure C&I, which is where we're at today, and need to do a 10% year-over-year increase, it doesn't take a whole lot of work to get and maintain that attractive yield over the term of the debt. Is that responsive, Brett?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. You had some good growth in core deposits this quarter, and I was wondering if that was specifically related to growth in the green mortgage product, maybe, and whether we should continue to see the mix improve of deposits like in the first quarter.
Well, our expectation is that you should continue to see improvement in mix. Galen, who's our new head of retail banking, is really doing a bang-up job in continue to build upon the strength that already existed within the network, focusing on increased sales of products and services through the branch. You know, he's introduced a building excellence program. There are now daily sales goals. They're reporting out on daily deposit growth. The branches in the coming weeks and months, as well as all employees in the organization, will fully understand how Pacific Trust Bank makes money and how their actions contribute to that. So they will be delivering the great level of service that they've always done, but they'll be doing it armed with a lot of knowledge that makes it easier for them to ask for the business and to keep the relationship that we've already had. You know, we also have a few other initiatives that we're working on to bring in increasing levels of non-interest-bearing or non-CD accounts the first half of 2000, 2011. You know, we noted the improvement in the mix and in the cost of deposits and cost of funds in the first quarter. But we've also provided in the 10-K, which you'll see shortly, some increased guidance on maturities for the CDs, and some of the increased guidance on maturities for the Federal Home Loan Bank advances. So that should help you sort of anticipate what might happen to the bank's cost of deposits and overall cost of funds for the balance of 2011.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thank you.
And then finally, just a quick question on TDRs, and I love the slide in your presentation. Thanks for that. I wanted to see if you could give me some color on whether or not we might see some of your performing TDRs run off soon.
Regan, you want to speak to that? Regan has laryngitis, so I'll jump in. One of the good things that happens to PacTrust is in July of this year, we'll go under the governance of the OCC. OTS tends to believe that once a TDR, forever a TDR, and they really frown on reclassifying a TDR to pass until the loan is paid off. So what we're trying to do now is include that enhanced reporting for you all to show what effectively we're reconciling a gap and traditional SEC reporting with our reporting requirements to the OTS. So you'll see in the bucket, I would expect that you'll see in the bucket where we show month-by-month breakdown in TDRs, you'll see that weighting heavily towards 12 months plus. But I think until that charter change occurs, we'll need to continue to report it as TDR.
Okay. Great. Great info. Thank you very much.
Again, to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Don Worthington with Hal Barnes, Halfer Arnett.
Hey, Don. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Greg. Good morning, everyone. Just have one other question. You mentioned as part of these recap costs some partial payments. So do you have more recap costs that are coming in 2011?
Well, here's where that's at. The employees had change control agreements that provided for the receipt of from 1 year to, I don't even recall the numbers.
The max was 2.99 years.
The max was 2.99 years, which was
for me.
Yeah.
Correct.
So upon a change of control, as classically defined, that's more than 25% of the ownership changed hands. And as part of this transaction, that happened. What management allowed to occur as part of this transaction is that they agreed to accept just half in connection with the initial change of control, but they remain protected in the event that they leave or they are separated as a result of some reorganization. The corporation has an obligation to pay them on an ongoing basis. Right now, they're all here, and there's no need to provide for that eventuality at this stage.
Okay, great. But
a direct response to your question is, if they all said, Greg, we love you or we don't love you, and we're leaving tomorrow, I think our obligation would be $1.6 million.
About $1.8 million.
Okay.
$1.7 million.
So that hangs out there, and we specifically pointed out the fact that 50% of that was paid because we wanted to disclose to the market that liability remains out there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Your next question comes from Barry Turner with D.A. Davidson.
Morning, guys.
Hey. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Actually, Don just took one of my questions, but just in terms of the loan loss reserve, went down quite a bit this quarter, obviously, due to that one large charge-off, I guess primarily. But as we progress into 2011, what level do you think that could get down to? What's your sense of kind of where regulators may force you to keep that number over a longer period of time?
Well, it's sort of hard to predict. They've certainly been comfortable with where we're at, and I can't really speak to the levels of of cushion that we may have in there today. My bias is to try to keep as much as possible in that provision. Part of what we've sort of forecasted is that I think in the New World, banks are generally going to be required to have, regardless of the quality or composition of their portfolio, a minimum of sort of 1.8 to 2% of loans. So I would never see it, quite frankly, dropping below a 1.8% level, and probably not likely to drop much below a 2% level forever. And I think that in the New World, FAS 5 and FAS 114 notwithstanding, I think the accountants will support that, unless and until there's substantial improvement and sustained improvement in the U.S. and global economy. There's just too much risk out there to allow for banks to go back to the traditional ALLL levels.
Okay.
Is that responsive?
Yes. Thank you, Greg. And just a follow-up on the question earlier about personnel expenses. I think you had mentioned they expect it to be $4 million higher in 2011 than 2010. I assume that that's X the $3.1 million.
Correct.
Of special costs in the fourth quarter.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions. You may continue with your presentation or closing remarks.
Well, once again, hopefully you've sort of heard from me in my opening remarks and in my response to some of these questions, my personal level of excitement about what we have here today at First PacTrust Bancorp and the bank, and the promise that stands before us in the future. I think we've got a lot of building yet to do, and we're working hard to do that. I'm particularly appreciative of management and the board and some of our advisors who have helped us immensely in achieving a great deal of work in over the past 3 to 4 months. And you know, as I often sign off on communication to staff, you know, and as a firm believer in the promise of the future, yeah, I believe the best is yet to come. So I thank all of you for joining us on this journey. For the analysts that are on the call, I thank you all for helping us improve transparency. Some of the comments that you've seen in the 8K and in the investor presentation came from advice and counsel that you've given us, and we look forward to having an even more enhanced level of transparency and relationship with our shareholders in the capital markets, because we work together, and you know, we work to create something great. So thank you all again, and we look forward to seeing you in the months to come.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.